Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Oh, boy. You know, some people are sick and tired of what's going on. Rod's just sick.
I'm just sick. And then sick and tired. But then, you know, I'm not as sick and tired as you are.
Oh.
But we'll leave that for another show. We're going to leave that for another show, okay? But no, I just want to start off with a couple of announcements. First of all, here's my PSA. If you're sick or you're having this bad strain of whatever it is that's going around, in my case, it was sinus infection and a respiratory infection. Okay? I tried to be a big boy and self-medicate and do all this stuff. And yes, there is something to be said for ginger and all that, you know, the more holistic and homegrown remedies. But if you have this year, please go see a doctor.
Nuke it.
Get
knock it out.
I ended up with having to do antibiotics, inhaler, Flonase, you know, and I still have a little bit of it. Now, as a result of that, I missed one show, and we were dark another show, I think, right? Or did I miss two?
You missed two. We were, the station was off the air between Christmas and New Year's, and then the first week of January.
I missed that show, right. Now, had I known, and this transitions me into my second thing, okay, that what I had in store for me was
reading.
But I'm not that special. Every host that has a show on this station was from Mr. Paul Roberts over there, is my own OC Talk Radio
lunchbox.
Radio lunchbox. That supposedly has cookies in it. I haven't opened this
yet. Oh, it's hard. You have to cut it on the side.
Oh, you have to cut it on the side. Okay. Yeah, so supposedly there's cookies in it. Any particular kind of cookies? What are they?
Chocolate mint.
Chocolate mint cookies. In my own retro radio
lunchbox.
Lunchbox, right?
So when you pack up to go come to the station and you put all your banana and your lunch in there and everything, I got a little lunch pail.
Right.
When
but
you come to work.
But we tell people this is not for children.
No.
Okay. You got to be an adult to do what we do.
And well, you asked me if there's a thermos.
I said, is there a thermos? And he says, no, there is no thermos, but there's a nice little bottle of straight rye whiskey.
That's right.
Okay? So had I known this, I would have probably been over my cold a lot faster. Right?
And that's just, I know we're going to get political, but I have to say that's because of Trump's impending election here. Everybody's going to need a bottle of booze to get
okay, so what you're saying, so what you're saying is the president-elect is good for the economy.
Yeah, for the liquor economy.
For the liquor economy.
Invest in liquor.
Okay, so there's a silver lining on everything,
silver
right? Okay.
Everything.
So anyway, I'm happy to be back.
Yes.
It was way too long. I was definitely getting an itch to the mic again. I wanted my mic again. And but seriously, if you do have this, go see a doctor, get it diagnosed, because most people who have this are dealing with it for like a month before they kick it. And I still have a little bit of a cough that's going on.
Don't give it to me.
I'm not. We're not that personal. But anyway,
you know, and that's you talk about aging baby boomers. That's one of the things I've seen amongst myself and my friends. This notion that even though that we can still do like we're 30, 40, just suck it up, keep going. I don't need to see a doctor. You know, I just, it's a little cold, it's a little sniff. My wife's certainly that way. I can be that way. My friend, who passed away this year, was like that, and to the point where he ignored many things and ended up with some serious heart complications that eventually caused his death.
So I know there's a lot of contention out there right now, and there's a lot of angst, and, you know, for multiple reasons, and people kind of are at each other's throats, so to speak. But let's just start with this, shall we? It's the first show of the new year. Let's just say this, right? Be it because you're aging, be it because whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we should do things a little bit differently. Okay,
I know your guest is going to suggest that today.
You know, we all talk about New Year's resolutions, and I saw something this year says, you know, why even bother, right?
Like
people aren't even interested in pretending to do New Year's resolutions anymore,
no.
Right? Let's just say, forget it, calling it a resolution. Just make a decision that maybe we should try things differently. Be open-minded. I'm not saying, you know, what the old Ronald Reagan quote, you know, trust but verify. Mm-hmm. Trust but verify. Be it about your health, be it about whatever's going on in your life. You know, focus on what's positive and what you can do something about.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of stuff that we maybe are given the impression that we can do stuff about, because really we really can't. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to take away or disempower anybody, but I think we all really know what we have control over and what we don't. Still,
I have control over this mic right now.
That's I know, and his button, his fingers on the button. Okay, I don't know if you should be given your finger on the button.
That's right,
right. But anyway, just I really want to try to make an effort to. We do it on the show in most cases. You know, we talk about really tough stuff, and we still try to empower people, give them some either tools
hope,
or
yeah.
you know, hope of
because many things. Let's just stick to this show. We're aging; can't stop it. Bad things are going to happen. Where you know people are going to, as you get older, you get the diseases happen, sickness happens, money matters, all this type of things that we're all worried about here. And as a generation, as we talked about, the baby boom is just kind of sticking. They're doing the opposite. They're not trying to think positive. Just not trying to think about it at all. I don't. If I'm sick, I'm not going to think about it. If I'm getting old, I'm not going to think about it. If I'm worried about the future, I'm not going to think about
it. Reality has a way of basically catching up with you. Well, okay,
that's what Obama said last night.
Right, but the reality it does, and I thought that was very poignant. And I think it was kind of interesting that the President of the United States has to actually state that.
Yeah.
Right, that reality will catch up with you. Reality will catch up with you. The bubble will burst at some point. But okay, and again, going back to the show, we've talked about hospice. We've talked about end of life. We've talked about elder abuse. We've talked about things that are very real for some people. It's not this stuff I'm listening on in the news. This is happening in my own life,
right.
One degree of separation. And yet, we try to basically give people a positive, a hope. You know, what can you do? And
well, you're trying to say that you can't get anywhere if you deny that there's a problem. We got to face some of these issues, and we got to be prepared for them, and think about them, and be willing to talk about them. We can't just deny and cover our ears and our eyes.
Well, I think that's a perfect segue to introduce our guest today.
Right.
Okay. Because I think
she has her eyes wide open.
I can hear her. She's like she's just ready to jump. Right. But so why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hello. Hi. My name is Kenwa, like quinoa, the grain.
But with a K.
But with a K. That's right. Unless I was in Qatar, and then it would be with a Q. happy 2017.
That's the craziest introduction I've ever heard in my life here. That's the craziest.
So what do you think about what we're talking about? I don't want to start off with your background.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, we're all going through this, right? In one way or the other,
change.
What do you think? Is are people looking for things they can embrace that are positive, even more so today?
Are they wallowing in the negative? Or three choices: looking for the positive, focused on the negative, or just don't want to talk about it, don't want to think about it, denial.
Or other choices. I don't like him limiting people.
Well, okay. Right. I think those are the three big ones.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. You face it, you deny, you're angry, you're trying to be positive, or you just try not to think about it.
I mean, look, we live down in the bubble of Orange County down here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You came from another land far, far north mm-hmm. called Los Angeles.
Even before that, I found out she came from Kansas, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Originally.
Well, are we in Kansas anymore? Yeah. No, we're not in Kansas anymore. But you have a very interesting, we were talking before the show started about how, you know, what you're doing today and where you started off with, right? And it's been kind of an interesting journey, I think, just looking at what you've done. So I think you've had an opportunity to basically connect with people, different levels, different backgrounds across mm-hmm. the country almost in a way. Mm-hmm. And what do you think of where we're at today in terms of just this need for positive, need for things that unite us versus, you know, just constantly being fed the stuff that divides us, kind of?
It's the most important, fertile, groundbreaking, revolutionary time we could possibly be in.
Why do you say that? Like, what makes you evaluate it that way?
Multiple reasons. To answer the previous question of what are people truly searching for?
Yeah.
Are they searching for positive alternatives? Are they just responding to their rage and their anger? There's a diaspora. You know, it's an eclectic mix right now, and different things are being different responses are being triggered at different times.
Right.
And we're being constantly bombarded with. We're being herded towards certain belief systems that are designed, that are structured to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, a lot of the media is you know, structured to create a strategized response.
Right.
So let's cut that. So get to a specific. So you're saying that we're creating a negative, a disaster's coming. We're talking about so much that we're going to make it happen. Or bad things are coming, or whatever you want to call it.
My perception is that the more we respond to this strategized stimuli, mm-hmm. the more likely we are to create what Paul just described.
Well, and to a certain extent, this isn't new, right? I mean, we keep talking about this like it just happened since November.
No, it's the oldest formula in the book.
Right, and you know, it's been a long time. Now, a decade at least, where sensationalism is the news. Sensationalism is what makes it on yeah. you know, scripts being picked
bleeds,
up for movies.
It leads. That's the old
if it
local.
If it bleeds, it leads.
That's the local news.
But with that, I see more and more people every day across the country, not mm-hmm. just here in the bubble, that are unplugging from the matrix, that are waking up and starting to see it for what it really is. Mm-hmm. There's a collective global awakening, and the cabal is working overtime because they know the jig is up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at everyone.
So what do you say to somebody? Because I agree with you, but I also, there's a voice in my head that's constantly like challenging me. What do you say to that voice or that person that says to you, yeah, but that's sort of wishful thinking? Yeah, it's wishful thinking right. that the cabal knows that the jig is up. Yeah, it's wishful thinking that people are unplugging because they see it for what it is. There's a thing about addiction, right? It's until you hit rock bottom, mm-hmm. there is no mm-hmm. recovery possible,
mm-hmm. right?
So I think we as a nation need to hit rock bottom. I hate to put it this way. You know, I know we're the greatest nation on the earth and make America great again, all stuff, but you know what? We're addicted. We're addicted to a whole bunch of this stuff.
Well, let's take it out of the political realm and put it into the personal.
No, but so, I am.
I'm just saying, so this show was created because my generation, the up to this point, the largest generation ever created in history here, the baby boomers, who came back from World War II and started having babies to replace those 50 million people killed here. So there was this big boom in babies. This generation has this wave continues to go, and at this point in our lives, we are on the cusp of some new unexplored chapter. Most people died in their 60s. That's why Social Security was created with a 65 limit.
Yeah, we'll remember the days when Social Security was at 65. We'll remember those days and go, oh my God, I can't.
So here we are, this big bubble. We haven't accepted. We changed what it was like to be teenagers. We created the word teenager and this teen angst and everything. We created a rebellious youth. We created the yuppie response to that. You know, suddenly we're going to be the most industrious group and the perfect parents, and we're going to do all these things. Now we're entering old age, and for the first time in our history of baby boomer, you know, activism here, we're in complete denial. We have nobody out there telling us what to do, how to act, you know, what to do. We're scared. For the first time, scared of the future.
And I was going to say, I think that's it.
We're scared.
And that is that's also what's driving, I want America to be 1950s America.
Again. Yeah, you may be right. Mm-hmm. This underlying
it's because
scare.
It's the safety zone, which I recall fondly.
And what that is founded in is that we're being forced to grow up in our own consciousness, individually and collectively, because the entire paradigm as of the 1950s was a recoil, was a counterwave to all the fear generated in the 1940s
of
global
40s,
annihilation or becoming a Nazi regime here in the States itself. So the 1950s was a complete recoil of going back into infantilization in our consciousness and in our society. I'm just going to fit this very small box, and the self-proclaimed authoritarian figure will take care of us.
Right.
And the 60s was
a rebuttal to that.
Right. And we've sort of
it was a rude awakening that they didn't take care of us. We had ecological disasters. We had wars that we didn't ask for. We had all these things that are like, wait a minute. We had politicians lying. We had police, brutality.
So explain to me
civil rights.
So explain to me this, Mr. Baby Boomer. Yeah. Okay. How is it?
Am I the only baby boomer in the room? I can't tell. She looks pretty young. She doesn't look like a baby boomer.
She's not going to tell you.
Which we need to discuss the whole issue of consciousness of age too.
Okay. But let me ask you this question, right?
Yes. I'm the big,
as you have
voice of the baby
told
boomers.
Me ad nauseum almost, right?
Yes.
You are now, I believe, 60 and a half?
61. I just turned 61 on Monday.
61. Happy birthday, Paul.
No wonder he's a Capricorn. Now,
Now it's all clear.
yeah, Capricorn and Aquarius in the same room. Okay. So, yeah, all right. On Capricorn, on the cusp of Capricorn, in my case. So,
21st?
22nd.
22nd.
Okay. So, all right. So, Mr. Baby Boomer, here's my question.
I was born the same day as Richard Nixon, by the way. Richard Nixon. Elvis is born on the 8th. I was born on the 9th with Nixon and Joan Baez, which only proves that astrology has to be correct, because when you think of Joan Baez, you automatically think of Richard Nixon.
And I was a professional astrologer, too.
Do I do this
every week?
Yeah, every week.
Every week.
Exactly. So, but believe it or not, nuggets do come out because I basically use them as a bouncing board, right? Or a punching bag.
I think
whichever one applies.
I think you're probably right, is that the 1930s and 40s were such a horrendous period. For the first time ever, we entered a world war, and we almost did destroy ourselves.
Right. So, and
out of that came the 50s. I never really thought of it that way, this kind of need for...
Please take care of it. Right. And then the 60s come back and says, no, you don't tell me what to do. But let me ask you this.
Right.
The current... You know, Trump, let's just say, okay, is not your generation.
He's a couple of years older.
He's older.
Yeah.
He's the oldest. He's in his 70s. Yeah. So he's like basically a decade, right, from when you are. Okay? So explain to me, Mr.
He's when they didn't have names
explain
for the
to
generation.
Me, Mr. Baby Boomer, because this is an interesting thing I can't get my head around, okay? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because of economic conditions or, you know, fear of the future or whatever it is, like mm-hmm. the unknown. How is it that an independent-minded baby boomer generation,
mm-hmm.
okay, basically starts acting like the please take care of me generation?
Because we're afraid. For the first time in our lives, we're afraid. Our
parents and picking are gone. Somebody who's basically saying, let me just take you back to the 50s.
Our parents are gone. My parents are gone. For most of our parents are gone or going or whatever. We are alone. We are the older generation. We didn't ask to be here. We were asked to grow up. We didn't want to grow up. We want to be 30 forever. And all of a sudden, for the first time in our lives, we're afraid of the future. We used to embrace the future. We used to love the future. The future was exciting. Now the future seems old age, running out of money, you know, economic chaos, social disruption.
See, I told you nuggets come out of this, okay?
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about this. Nobody's talking about how a generation driven by hope and aspiration and thinking outside the bubble.
And I'll do whatever I want to do.
Blazing new trails and going across country and taking up things that are not considered institutionalized career paths and all this stuff, right? All of a sudden, he's acting like your parents.
Worse than our parents.
Worse than your parents. And it's fear.
And it started with 9/11. That was the trauma shock. That was the event that trauma shocked the planet, but especially this country. And the great dictators know that the way to implant the consciousness, that hypnotic phase where they can drip feed whatever agenda they want to the mass populace, is to trauma shock the collective. And 9/11 was the event that just ripped us open. Spiritually, consciously, societally, economically.
I think it had been building for a while.
Boy, I'd like to finish a sentence.
I know. Well, I know, but I think it's been building for a while. But I agree. I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just saying it's been building for a while.
Finish that thought, because I didn't grow up here, and so when 9/11 happened, it was horrific. But I had references of other horrific situations in other parts of the world. That weren't too many degrees of separation from where
right.
I lived, right?
Right.
So to me, when I saw 9/11, it was absolutely horrific. On a human level, it was, and the visuals on it were just absolutely, you know, you can't forget them, right? But there was also another layer to it. To me, it was also a case of where the United States was finally touched by something that had been happening to a lot of different countries and a lot of different people for a lot of time. I mean, look at what's happening today now in Syria,
Aleppo,
in Aleppo, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So I see that, right?
Well, you're saying it brought it home.
I see that, and I think, you know, it's an interesting thing that to use that as a benchmark of when this
fear.
We turned that corner. So finish your thought.
And it was implemented with a specific agenda and intent behind it, and to do just that. Because, yes, there have been atrocities happening globally that America was numb to and benign to, but America always had this too big to fail. You know, we are impermeable.
You cannot touch our commitment to fairness and equality and democracy, but whatever you do, and here comes this action that basically, I agree with you, did exactly what it was supposed to do, and it basically was done to us by us after a certain point.
Yes.
Because when we start putting in the Patriot Act, and we start putting in things like that to basically limit freedoms in the name of national security,
safety,
and protection and safety, we start acting as the line that, you know, fear is the mind killer. Fear is the mind killer. And I think that is something that we don't talk enough about, because the minute you start actually having awareness that this may be what's going on with you, this may be what is motivating you, if you are the kind of person that will not be told that to behave from that position, you will rebel against it. And if you rebel against it, then your only possible way to rebel against it is to say, no, I'm not going to deny my good-naturedness. I'm not going to deny my heart. I'm not going to basically stop being trusting just because I am told that I need to be afraid of my neighbor. No.
The others.
I pay too much of a price individually if I become that person. Right? Doesn't mean that I am not conscious. Doesn't mean that I'm not aware of my surroundings. But I am not going to sell my soul to the arena of fear.
Right. But so let me ask a question. So I sense that you both want to have a positive outlook on this stuff, and
it's not a naive outlook. I want to be very clear. It's not a naivety. It's not coming from a position of naivety, because a lot of people will tell you, oh, that's just naive. You should be packing heat. You should be getting your permit. You should be basically building the friggin' bunker.
Leaving the country, right?
You know, leaving the country. Get your passport ready. Make sure you have enough food to last you 6 months.
But do you really believe that the majority or even a large segment of people feel like that? As I think it's fear. Gripped by fear.
What does
that
have to do with you? If you really still believe your Paul going to the voting booth counts, why are you handing over your individuated power to this collective?
Why are you giving that in?
Well,
right?
I'm afraid because the mobs of
You're
fear.
Basically.
I'm saying the fear now permeates me. I'm afraid. I'm just honestly, I've said this before, and people kind of laugh and say, "You're not really afraid." I'm really afraid. I really am seriously afraid. What Meryl Streep tried to express the other night, I don't agree that was the time and place to do it. Just shut up. It doesn't get us anywhere moaning about it. But I don't disagree with anything she said. I think we're entering a period where many of us, maybe we're the liberal elites, maybe we're the coastal elites, maybe we're the ones that ignored what was happening.
But again, those are just labels. I think what Kenwa was asking is you.
I'm afraid.
You know what? I believe him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I genuinely believe him.
And I have compassion for that.
Yeah.
In no way am I judging that.
Yeah. No, I believe him. I believe there is genuine that. But I think also, if you faced that, and you looked at it a little deeper than reactionary, okay, you would realize that part of that fear is basically self-imposed. You've bought into the fact that you should be afraid, and here's what I will tell you again, which is very much. And I
hope you're right.
You know, I got my Aquarian lab coat on. Okay,
right.
It really is fascinating for me.
Looks good on you.
Thank you. It's custom made by Dave Welsh Bespoke, my custom tailor, who's a sponsor of the show.
By the same man that made the Emperor's clothes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And they look good on him.
No, actually, I don't think they've done the Emperor's clothes. But anyway, but the joke is that we actually have a custom tailor, as a friend of mine, who's basically a sponsor of the show, who dresses me for radio.
Right.
Right. So I'm not wearing, you know, if you're watching me, then I'm not, you know, Emperor has no clothes or has no lab coat today. But if you're listening to me, yes, I'm wearing a lab coat made by.
He's actually naked, folks. I'm just listening.
Shh, not so loud. Okay. But really, you know, I think it's fascinating to me because you've said it a million times. I'm a boomer wannabe. I'm a Gen Xer, right?
Right.
To me, there's a certain jadedness in the world. It's just a matter of fact. You come from a generation that has sort of a complete belief in everything is possible, and I'm going to basically go, you know, shape my own destiny and all this stuff. And yet that same generation at a later point in life right now has almost abandoned the things that made it defined its generation.
Because we're afraid. Because we're afraid that's not, for the first time in our life, we're afraid it's not true. I don't know that I can stop old age. I don't know that I can live a good, healthy final year, that I'll have enough money to survive. I don't know that disaster isn't lurking around the corner in my own life. And I certainly look, I look at the greater picture, you know, the people who are angry at who voted for Trump were by and large, hey, the world has left us by. Where I grew up in the Midwest, we've been abandoned, we've been forgotten, we've been overlooked. The world has changed and we don't like it. We've lost our jobs, we've lost our social norms, and we don't like it.
So you...
And I don't like the fact that they've risen up and done something this dumb.
So you're from the Midwest.
Yes.
You're of that generation.
Michigan and all that.
Okay, and we have just defined sort of loosely, very quickly, your path of living. Here's how I felt, and this is how I feel now.
Right.
Okay? We happen to have our guest is also from the Midwest.
Right.
Okay?
We should never go through, we should ever go through a background, too, because we haven't done that.
I know, I do. I want to do that right now. But as part of that, too, okay, I think give the pretext of the background because I think it's important that you've been in the Midwest, now you moved to California. There's been a story there of a life path. But it's interesting, without putting you on the spot as far as age and generation, okay, to do in comparison, because you can say, you know, Midwest, white Midwest America, mm-hmm. white Midwest America, you know, here's where you are right now in your life, okay? He's 61. Hold on. He's 61.
Right.
As of last week.
As of last week.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Is he an old fart to you, or is he a...
No.
Let's just say the two of you are contemporaries, okay?
No, let's not say
Not say that? Okay. So what do you think? I mean, how is it that you don't have that perspective at this point?
It boils down to conscious choice of, yes, we all go through those experiences and phases of being enraged, livid, afraid, undermined. But the arc of everyone's journey on some fundamental level is to make a conscious choice of whether we allow our wagon to be hitched to the star of fear
mm-hmm.
or individuated governorship.
Which also comes with personal accountability.
Absolutely. And that's going back to the whole time of the 50s. Mm-hmm. We're still in the echoes. We're still in the derivatives. We're still in those ripples from that giant pebble being dropped in the 50s. We're in the ripples of that consciousness of sort of, again, infantilizing our society.
But
more and more individuals are coming out of that and are choosing to come out of that. And there's a momentum having been generated.
I agree. I think those that are on that path right now, out of necessity, out of a desperation for something to embrace that's not everything else that's around them, I think there is a momentum. I agree. Now, you said to me something that I found very interesting, is that, you know, as we were looking at what you had done, and I said, you know, you were at the University of Kansas for a degree in physics, and you were raised on a farm in Kansas, and then, you know, you went through Jet Propulsion Laboratory, you know, in Pasadena, and, you know, you're doing what you're doing now. And you said to me, I asked you, why physics, right? Mm-hmm. What does a kid born, you know, raised on a farm in Kansas go to? Why do you pick physics? And you said to me, which was totally unexpected, by the way. I thought you were going to say, you know, I was interested in basically being involved in the space program or something like that,
or
a technical kind of reason for it. But you said something very interesting, and I responded, it's interesting when somebody maybe has that awareness young in age, right? Mm-hmm. What did you say to me when I asked you that question?
What did I say? On the farm, it's very quiet. We have true dark skies. We can see all the stars. And I would go out at night with my grandmother, and we would lie on this wooden wheelbarrow that her great-grandfather made in the summer, in the winter, too. And we'd take astronomy books out and just identify the constellations, and we would watch eclipses and meteor showers. And there was this deep peace and knowing and sense of belonging that I had with the cosmos, and a sense of no separation between a star that was thousands of light years away and, you know, the ash trees that were in our backyard and the horses that were in the stable and me. Mm-hmm. It was a knowing of the connectedness of it all. And I wanted to tactilely be more a part of that. Mm-hmm. There was a spiritual understanding and knowing of it, but I wanted to intellectually cultivate it and bring it into 3D.
So did you get that or the beginning of that by going and pursuing a degree in physics?
I did. And I always had two passions. I've been a performing artist my whole life, and also the interest in physics, astronomy, aeronautical engineering.
When did you start performing?
I wrote my first play at 8, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And just been, you know, performing ever since. I've sung in opera companies. I've been in multiple R&B bands and funk bands. And, I was the only non-black person there, because I've never identified myself as white.
Anybody that we would know?
We opened up for some bands that were signed. Yeah.
Like what kind of bands did you open up for?
They were more rock bands, but the bands that I was in were very groove-oriented, very funk R&B, but with edgy guitar, a lot of heavy guitar.
So, Sly and the Family Stone type stuff, maybe?
A little more progressive than that, but yeah. Yeah.
So that was pretty progressive for its time.
You're absolutely right.
Interracial band that broke a lot of barriers.
That's true. So I used to know Rose Stone.
Did you?
Yeah.
Larry
Graham
and his unique style of bass playing, whacking it instead of
so what? So where do you go from a degree in physics from the University of Kansas? What came next?
Let's see. What did I do then? I think that's the next thing I did was I was really being drawn to music, and I learned over time. There was such an intricate relationship between the stars and the cosmos and music and sound and creativity. Mm. You know, it's only since the Spanish Inquisition that these two have been divided, you know, as a cultural perception.
So it's not left brain, right brain, two different spheres
they're,
of your
They're meant to be
low.
Integrated. Mm-hmm. You know, before the Spanish Inquisition, every Catholic pope had his own personal astrologer, you know? Mm-hmm. So, again, we're living in the echoes of that contrived schism, but we're healing it, you know? Which, huzzah! So
you went from there and you worked for JPL and
so
stuff?
So I went from my doing my degree in physics at the University of Kansas to being a recording engineer.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So
how
did that happen?
I was working with a band in Kansas, and they went to record a studio in Kansas City. It was a fantastic studio. And I got in there and I went, okay, this feels right. I get this, and so I went through their training, and when we finished, they said, hey, guess what? Our main engineer's going off to Fantasy Studios up in San Francisco, where Journey
famous.
Recorded. Yeah, huge,
famous
lot of great bands, iconic bands record up there. He's leaving. He was my teacher, and he said, I got the job at Fantasy. Do you want the, you know, so we're bumping up the second engineer. Do you want the entry level? I said,
Very cool.
Yeah.
So that's again sort of pursuing the path wherever it may take you. Almost it sounds like right.
It's a baby boomer kind of journey.
It's an interesting thing.
Can I raise one interesting thing? I was at the NAMM show, National Association of Music.
Going next week.
Okay. So am I. And met Jeff Skunk Baxter and didn't realize until I met him there and then started seeing some stuff on YouTube. He has transitioned into a whole second career. In missile technology, where Jeff Skunk Baxter, the iconic guitar player for Steely Dan and then the Doobie Brothers, because he got into engineering and it was in the early days where it's about the physics of trying to make sound,
right,
and trying to make things happen. He realized he had some. He started doing his own research into the physics of music and sound and other sorts of things here, and wrote a paper just on pure. As a laugh, and gave it to Dana Rohrabacher here, the U.S. representative in Huntington Beach, who sent it to a committee and said, hey, this is actually, it was something about some missile idea of a missile technology. Like, you know, why don't we, it's kind of like all my research into sound and all the things, somehow we could use this to do this. And somebody kind of thought, that's kind of a hoot. Maybe we should have the Doobie Brothers guitarist come and talk to the Defense Institute. And he actually became and has worked now as a serious defense analyst for a number of years. And the other guy was the guy from Queen, I think,
Brian May.
Brian May, who has a degree in physics, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there isn't, as strange as those two might seem to us mere mortals here, what she's saying is true. There are a number of musicians who...
After 2 years, you should know me by now, right? The reason why I'm positioning it this way, okay, yeah. is because at the end of the day, what does this show? It shows that to blanketly position people under a certain category and a label...
You hate that. You hate
right?
labels and...
Basically... loses a whole layering of what these people have to offer,
right.
right? And again, we are in a position right now where we're basically falling back to this, I want this very neat little package with a nice little label.
Right.
You know, I can't look, I don't want to allow myself to look at people beyond the label, be it political party, be it refugee, be it religion, be it race, be it whatever, right?
Right.
And in many ways... I don't know that we have lost the momentum of moving forward and evolving, if you will, in terms of awareness and consciousness as a country, but I think there's definitely a throwback. And why I was talking to you and asking you, Paul, is because I've been trying to put my finger on what is causing this throwback that's almost like a recoil on the rubber band.
Because it feels like safety to compartmentalize
exactly.
things, because then I can control it. Mm-hmm. If I can put this person in a file according to age, gender, race,
exactly.
you know, blah, blah, blah,
I can
then
turn
it gives
predictable,
me a false you know. Sense of control.
Right, it becomes predictable.
And let me just be the person, the bearer of bad news once again.
Yeah.
Okay? It's a false premise.
Yeah.
But I'm going to challenge that because isn't physics, a mere idea of physics, trying to find the universal order of things?
Understand.
The idea that somehow
not
we
to
can...
control.
Bingo.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding.
To understand, not to control.
Okay.
That's where we lose it.
Yes.
Okay? We yes. somehow pretend, and I think there's a bunch of ego and arrogance involved.
Yes.
We pretend that the understanding is hand in hand with control. You can understand something all day long. Okay, and I'm going to get a little like little spiritual on this, right? All the people that say they are devout Christians, you understand the Bible and God and all this stuff all day long. Does that mean you control it? No. Okay, understanding does not mean control. We are basically feeding ourselves, whether it be through news, be through whoever we follow, be, you know, the life some life coaches that are self motivated by self interest, whatever it is, right? You got to be very careful because if you go out and you said it, self fulfilling prophecy. If you go out and feed yourself the nourishment of what it is going to be needed for me to hear to feel that I control my destiny. Then you miss out on one real reality. Is there certain things that you have no control over?
Then you have hit another
and that's
breakthrough
when, that's
moment.
When, that's when you have to have a courage to basically embrace the true nature of yourself versus abandon that true spirit of being a child of the 60s, a baby boomer,
right.
and now basically start acting like I am afraid of everything, including the rock pebble in my driveway.
But you just
and, you
missed
know,
the connection right there. The connection is then, up until this moment in my life, I was in control of my life. Nobody told me what to do. The man didn't tell me what to do. I went where I wanted. I did what I wanted. I was free. I explored lots of positions like your guest here and did lots of crazy things in my life. And so I had a sense of freedom that my life was not limited. I could be anything I wanted to be. That's what I was told when I was a little kid. And that's what I took as a mantra. The whole baby boomer generation, we can be what we want to be, right?
Right, but you were never in control, Paul.
But, well, we thought we were.
No, you rode the wave. You yeah. learned how to ride a wave. You never could control the way the wave was going to break.
I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying, though, but for a lot of baby boomers, probably me included, for the first time in my life, I feel controlled by events. If there's a big, for example, just to give you a real tangible, like, let's say there's a big economic recession again here, which many people fear. Whether it was Trump or not, I mean, we're just riding on another.
No, this is beyond. This is yeah. beyond. Like Ken Wah said, this is beyond yeah. politics. This is on an individual level.
But your point is that you know I'm not in control. So if there's a big economic recession, that scares me because within a few years, of some sense, I'm probably going to retire or cut back or do something. Mm-hmm. You know, when I get to my 70s or something, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, I can't keep doing what I'm doing, right? I got to change my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that means I got to have money in the bank. And right now, the only money I have is in the house. So if the house goes down again, there goes my life savings. Or other people say the thing with 401k or whatever. So to say, well, just don't worry about it and you're not in control.
I didn't say don't worry about it.
That's scary.
I didn't say don't worry about it.
I have
or,
to be scared.
Or plan.
I have to be scared.
I just said that don't let that basically
control your life.
Paralyze you.
Right.
Because that's what it's doing now. That's what it's doing. Go ahead.
Well, and ultimately, again, one makes their fundamental choices out of either being externally referenced or mm-hmm. internally referenced.
It's true.
And what's being described is definitely understandable, but it's, again, handing over the reins of one's life to external governorship. And, you know, you look at any spiritual path, you look at any spiritual teacher throughout history, one of the main common denominators was, allow me to offer you a way to take the reins of your own life back. You don't
right.
need a broker.
Right.
You don't need a broker to tell you how to source the divine. Allow me to offer you some tools and a technique to source it yourself. And when you do that, when that's the foundation of your life, you can be internally referenced. And that's when you do find not just control, but a whole different orientation of what that sense of control is.
Yeah, no, I think the word control maybe is misleading. It's more of a wholesomeness. It's a completeness.
Yeah.
That never is really, I know it sounds very esoteric, not really complete ever, but it's on the path to that. Okay, it's an erased awareness. And Paul,
I'm lost. So you say to people I grew up with who lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Through, you know, the industry's changed. There's no longer going to be high-paying work for low assembly work. That's going to go somewhere else, or it's going to go to robots. How do you say to those people,
how is that an all of a sudden reality?
Well, it wasn't. It's happened over a period
right,
of time.
Right. So the deniability of that as a possible outcome down the road is part to blame.
But
and
if
that
you just,
is self-imposed.
Okay, but if you just say, well, okay, so don't worry about those external things. There's nothing you can do about them. But they impact your life directly. You don't have a job
right, but
anymore.
I'm sorry.
One can be aware of them as a factor in the equation without having them be the dominant, decisive components that drive one towards a reactive response, because that is what the system and the cabal wants. They want you to react rather than act.
We talk about it all the time on the show when it comes with aging, is that it's not an issue about reaction, it's about issue of proactivity.
Right.
Okay? Anybody who sits here and tells me that the job that they have been doing for the last 20 years all of a sudden got outsourced or got automized, and they are basically at a loss of what to do,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, where have you been for the last 20 years? What happened? All of a sudden, 20 years, one day you went in and got into the job and you're doing it, and then 20 years later, somebody showed up with the rope up to replace you? No.
No.
There were things that happened along the way.
That's right.
What did you do where you took personal accountability, and I'm not saying you were only responsible to come up with the solution. What did you do? What did the environment around you, what did your union, what did your company, what did your government do to provide you alternative means? But you had to take personal accountability of actually pursuing those means, right, for that job, right? Outsourcing, by the way, we talk about outsourcing, and I'm in no way am I saying that outsourcing is necessarily a healthy thing to do just at random, right? But there's also outsourcing that happens that is not a foreign outsourcing. When companies scale down and they take everybody that worked for them and turn them into contract laborers and cut out their benefits
right.
and still are doing, that's outsourcing as well.
Sure.
So all of these things have been happening. For us to all of a sudden act in 2016 during an election cycle like, oh my God, the sky is falling and I've lost my job, is not really personal accountability.
Right.
Right? But I will tell you, here's the thing that's interesting that just came out of this conversation.
But that's not what Bernie said. You were a big Bernie supporter. He didn't say, hey, just suck it up and take control of your life again here. It's been happening for a while. Why didn't you recognize and take steps to deal with it? He basically said, no, it's outsourcing and free trade to Bernie.
Nobody has said that because nobody wants to basically lose votes by challenging
exactly.
your bubbled reality.
Right, by okay. calling people on their own stuff.
On their own shit, excuse me, right? Okay, so here's the thing. It's interesting that the voters that voted the way they did to reclaim the safety of the 1950s,
right?
That is what they chose to remember, right? And in the course of choosing to remember that, what they didn't choose to remember, or maybe they didn't realize they could actually choose this path, was to remember the spirit of self-reliance in making decisions that they also exhibited as a generation. Yes. The stuff that Kenwa was talking about, that your internal guide, that you decided what your destiny was going to be. You decided what you were going to pursue, and whether you learned along the way positive or negative lessons, you were okay with that. There was always a risk factor. Now, granted, you've gotten older, and the risk factors seem a little more overwhelming
and large.
But I'll tell you where the answer is. The answer, from what I'm seeing, the answer is to be reminded of how you navigated those waters guided by your internal,
once upon a time,
internal compass.
Yes.
Versus abdicating that. Because, in fact,
yes,
the baby boomer generation had an aversion, a strong dislike and aversion to abdicate their own personal wish and will to somebody else to decide for them. And
right,
this is exactly what's happening now.
So, but you hit the key factor, which you got to understand, which is age. It's not so easy to pick up and start over as it was when you're 20. You remind me of another article I read by Joel Kotkin, another local pundit who writes a lot of stuff. I think he was actually a news director here at one point in time for Channel 2 or something.
Okay.
Writes in both conservative and liberal papers, runs some policy institute, I think, now at USC. And he said, you know, it's the first time I've ever heard this, maybe the baby boom generation that came of age in the 60s when we love everybody and we're going to help everybody, suddenly is going to become the most selfish generation in history, because I got mine, and sorry you didn't get yours. Sorry, people who got outsourced. Sorry, immigrants. Sorry, the people left behind. Sorry, youth that can't afford to buy a house anymore. I got mine, you know, but and we're going to fight. Like every generation, we're gonna flip and go back to fighting to hold on to what's
and that,
ours.
And that very well might be right. I mean, not everything you know stops and ends with the baby boomer generation. There are other generations after, and there will be others after that. The interesting situation is just again, and I'm just being my lab coat on and from an observer position, right?
Right.
I'm looking at a group of people that was motivated by individual guidance and compass.
Right. Follow your own path.
Because of age, and I think it's an excuse, by the way. I don't think it's really legitimate enough.
It's what's caused the
fear. Because you know what? Your parents got older, too. And your kids are going to get older, too. And that's a universal truth.
But these generations have been strategically, incrementally conditioned to be reliant upon an external authority figure. And they've gotten comfortable. They've gotten addicted to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is generating the responses that Paul was just describing. But it's not absolute. It's not set in concrete. And even the, just as you were describing, you know, the whole perception of age and X age equals these labels, you know, these files, again, is a societal conditioning. It has zero, absolute zero, minus 273 degrees Kelvin. That's where anything will freeze.
Absolute zero, yes.
That's right. Yeah. He knows. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but it is. It is.
Yeah. To do with one's actual age is a state of consciousness. And so every individual can choose, however hardwired they perceive themselves and believe themselves to be, to go, okay, does it suck that all the things that you described have happened and are happening to me, my friends, my family, my, you know, fellow countrymen? Yes. But I can still choose
to
unplug from the matrix
and
take positive action into reinventing myself, creating a new paradigm. You know, Bill, I mean, it is phenomenally encouraging to see these kids coming out of college that are, you know, $250,000 in student loan debt, and they've got master's degrees out the yin-yang, and, you know, their job offerings are Starbucks barista.
Yeah.
But they're garnering business loans and creating little startup businesses like popcorn all over the places that are progressive, that are environmentally sound, that are community building.
Right.
my God, this, I haven't ever experienced this before.
Right.
And I see other people that are working minimum wage jobs willing to go and spend more money at these places than at Walmart.
Right.
Because they know that this is the way forward.
There's a race consciousness that happens. It may not be across, like, you know, what you would call mainstream board, but it's definitely happening and becoming more mainstream every
year.
So
why did, in your opinion, both of you, why did the baby boomer, who, as you correctly pointed out, we weren't going to be told what to do. We were thought we were in control of our own destiny. We could do anything we wanted to do. We were self-empowered. We could just take control of our lives and take it any direction we want. And we did, for the most part. Why in old age are we suddenly so fearful that we can't do that again? Is it because, as you said, we just got used to drinking at the trough here? You know, we just got used to the security
and the feeling of that. You remember you were hippies?
Yeah.
And then you were yuppies.
Right.
And then you are now uppities, right? Or whatever we want to call it.
We can't figure that out, this new term. We're scaredities.
You're scaredities. Exactly.
Cats.
That's a good one.
We're scaredy cats. And so, or is it simply, you know, you're saying, well, reclaim your youth. Remember what you once were and do it again. And we're saying, I'm too old. It's too late. I'm too scared. I don't like
it.
I don't want to do it.
That's conditioned. That's what I was addressing just a few minutes ago.
We're throwing a tantrum. We don't want to.
Yes. There has been a strategic conditioning. It has all been very well scripted to steer this generation towards that default consciousness.
We got co-opted by the good times.
That's how that happened.
I thought I was a conspiracy theorist.
We got co-opted, huh? We got controlled and corralled.
But you know what I found fascinating? I was kind of chuckling while you were asking that question.
Yeah.
Okay. Here you are again, as a representative of your generation, abdicating personal responsibility to come up with the answer. Okay? Let that sink for a minute, okay? Let that just sink for a minute, right? You were basically asking me, you're proving exactly Kenwa's point, that you've abdicated your
can't figure it out anymore, you tell me.
So I'm going to turn around and ask the question to you, okay? Forget about the fear. Okay,
because
you know what she just said? She said that kids that have $200,000 in student loans, right?
Right.
You don't have $200,000 in loans?
No.
Okay, you got kids, and you're going to tell me, well, because they're younger, they'll outlive their $200,000. Baloney, right? They're just going to accumulate
more. I'll tell you exactly what it is.
But if you were at the age of those kids, and you had $200,000 in loans,
right,
would you be acting like those kids? Or would you be scared again?
Oh, I wouldn't be scared again. No, I would be. I think we were not scared as in our youth. We're scared in our old age, and I think that's the difference. And it isn't just because we're old and tired and lazy and worried and all the other stuff. Here's the
play along with
right,
me for
well,
a minute. Okay?
I know I get what you're saying, but let me answer it. So that for
no, I haven't asked the question yet.
Oh, okay. you said why are
no,
we?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was the first tier. We're kind of stuck.
There's another
on.
Question.
Yes,
right.
The underlying question is this: for a minute there, just shed the fear,
right.
Shed the worry, shed the concern about the future. Right now, you
good.
Tell me. You tell me. Just
right.
take a minute. Okay, and reconnect with that internal guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you tell me what that internal guidance says about Paul, and going forward today, tomorrow, not 10 years from now. Just keep it within the realm of the now. Okay, what does an internal compass say? Does that internal compass feel completely out of control and overwhelmed? Does that internal compass says I still the captain of my own ship? What does that internal compass say?
Both. That was just my reaction. For the first time, where there are forces out there that we can't control that frighten me, populism, all these
right,
isms.
I told you to shed any distractions and noise.
But see,
don't let your own wheels drive you crazy to bring in an eagle song.
I think that's what everybody's. I'm trying to struggle with, and I'm asking people about, and I'm trying to examine in myself this. And I truly believe that that's what's changed the baby boomers from what we once were to what we are now. Is fear. Overwhelming fear. Fear of others. Fear of change. Fear of uncertainty. Fear of the future. Fear of old. Getting old.
And you know what?
I think that mostly comes from the getting old.
Okay, so you told me both, and you just spent the last minute basically telling me one-sided. So drop the fear side and tell me what the other side is.
I don't think we can. That's why we can't let go of it.
But you see,
the fear is so overwhelming, I can't let go of it.
You can't
mission accomplished.
Right.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, but you can't
and
just say suck it up and forget it.
Shot yourself in the ass.
But you make it so
which
easy.
Is exactly
you say,
what
just
they
forget
want.
The fear. Just forget the fear. It isn't
He's
that
not
easy.
Saying that.
I didn't say that.
He's
I just set it aside
that.
For a minute.
Well, you're saying...
Set it aside for a minute. It's okay. You can define your life without having to carry this thing like a cloak, okay, and wear it for everybody to see.
Right.
Okay, set it aside for a minute. Okay?
How do you do that? I don't know how to set it aside.
And yet you knew how to do that for the majority of your life.
Because I was young. And
no.
Being old... Well, no, you're asking... You're putting it down.
Because you were young?
Yeah, because when you're... I think the baby boomers, as they look old... The baby boomers have one fear that nobody wants to talk about.
You had it set aside. We're going to go probably till 1:30, but
yeah,
you had it set aside,
right.
Okay, for the majority of the first year of me doing this show.
The fear has grown
because that is what has been cultivated.
I think that's
that is what
say.
Has been mended and cultivated and tilled, and not only by outside forces but by internally and individually.
Yes. But it's here now, and it's going to affect my life.
And you get to.
I can't ignore it.
And you could weed it out.
It can be. It must be acknowledged. It must be turned over. It must be examined from every little facet. But if one chooses to fall, thank you. Sorry. If one chooses to follow fear to the end of the maze, I can guarantee you there is no cheese. At the end of that tunnel.
No. And I think so, we're afraid of.
So, therefore, if one knows, if I...
There's no cheese at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, little mousy.
Right.
So, yes, let's acknowledge it. Let's not forget it. Let's not sugarcoat it. Let's not New Age 101,
right.
You know, glaze over it. No one is saying that there is cheese at the end of that tunnel. But we can still choose whether or not we... Put that as our steering wheel. As if we make that, again, the star that we hitch our wagon to, we can make that a phase that we pass through, the dark night of the soul, that we peel the layers off, that we have the wool stripped away from our eyes, and that we come into knowing ourselves more deeply. Through that, we can rebirth on the other side from a new place of empowerment and clarity. And restoration.
I hope that's what happens out of this. The baby boom has one unique, I think there's two aspects of our personality that are biting us in the ass right now here. One, we never wanted to grow up. We're being forced to grow up.
Yes.
Okay. That's one of the defining things of the baby boomers. We still think we're 30. We still think somebody's going to take care of everything. We still think...
You haven't joined AARP yet, have you?
No, I never
And yet I did when I turned 50.
Oh, no.
So
never.
There you go, right? It's a choice of embracing or denying.
And I've told you, I can't be called grandpa. You know, my wife can't be called grandma. You know, we've had to come up with other names. And I find among my friends, oh, yeah, I came up with another name. No, then I'm not being called grandpa or grandma. Call me anything you want to call me but that. So we've all come up with these goofy nicknames. So we refuse to grow up. That's biting us in the ass because we're being forced to grow up more so than ever because our parents are gone and we're suddenly the old folks and how the hell did we get here? And there's another fear that nobody wants to talk about. And I guess it's childish. It goes to that I'm scared, little kid in us here. We are going to live longer than anybody has ever lived in the history of humankind. Lucky me, I always say, I'm going to get to live to be 100. And I say that sarcastically because that doesn't sound exciting. That sounds scary. I'm going to be in an old age home with no money. I'm going to be broke. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be sick.
But you see,
I could be the opposite.
No, but you
but
see,
it sounds scary.
But do you see the sadness in that?
Oh, yeah.
No. The sadness in the fact that instead of looking at your extra years of being on this
planet
as a bonus of doing stuff with the wisdom and knowledge of what you know today. You're looking at that as a reason to be afraid.
Yeah. And you're
rather
laughing.
Rather than hopeful, but excited.
You get a bunch of my friends in here, and you get them past the BS, and you get a couple drinks at them and have them talk real. They're all similarly scared because they're scared of what those next 30 years are going to look like. They're scared of money. They're scared of getting sick and spending 20 years in a nursing home. They're scared of
all the future stuff seems scary. All right, so... Let me ask you this.
Rightly or wrong,
I'm going to ask you this real quick, but then I want to ask Kenwa also to give her a take on it.
Right.
When you used to get scared, mm-hmm. let's just go back 30 years, mm-hmm. 25 years, whatever, mm-hmm. 10 years even probably, right? When you used to get scared, when you were challenged and faced a situation that you hadn't really faced before, and we all do because it's the nature of life. You're going to get things and realities that you have to face as you get older, right? What did you do when you were overwhelmed by that situation, where you were faced by something that you were not, you were uncomfortable with, that you were afraid of, that could really have a devastating impact? What did you do?
I called my mommy and daddy, but they're gone.
And what did and that's what you did?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, to some level, I probably did. I always felt my mom and dad were there to back me
up. So
who
did you call when your father and mother were not around anymore?
I don't have anybody to call. There's nobody to call.
No, and I'm asking the question genuinely, Paul, because I think that, you know, there were things that you faced. And there were challenges that you overwhelmed. So you don't have your mom and dad to call. You don't have maybe that support system. And maybe that's part of it, too, is that we grow older, and especially for guys, you know, maybe we don't have that reached out support system that has been cultivated as we grow because we're focused on work and maybe family, but we don't really put enough, and we've talked about this before, we don't invest enough in other aspects of our existence to where we have that, right? Women are better at that in many ways.
Look how many people are not only lost their parents, have lost their spouses and everybody else. Half of our baby boomers are alone in our homes and are divorced.
Right.
And they don't even have mommy and daddy. They don't have a spouse or a pal to call.
I think that is a very important part of this conversation we're having, because that is a reality that people have. If you had a built-in support system, if you had people that, you know, we're all kind of wired and built for connection, right? We've said that many times.
Right.
If you have that, then you maybe are better likely to navigate and correct when you're faced by those challenges, by those turbulent waters of life, right?
Absolutely.
Because I know you deal with things differently. Okay, you're saying you're coming from a position, and I may be wrong, but correct me if I am. You're coming from a position of where it's a personal choice I make on how I address and deal with things.
Right.
And maybe part of it has, although I think both of you have had a diverse background in terms of career path, etc., maybe part of it is coming across things, maybe adjusting to things maybe more frequently than Paul, for example, has had, and that has built a skill set, I mean, let's call it what it is, right, to navigate these things more instinctively, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he is now challenged by things that maybe it's the first time he's being challenged in this way, regardless what it is that's challenging him. What tools, what approaches, what things do you think somebody can do to try to break that pattern of reactive reaction
to
situations?
That would be helpful. Tell us.
Right.
What are some things that you think somebody could do?
I saw she brought some swords.
That's definitely...
There's always an option for that.
That's right. You betcha. And, you know, martial arts training is... You know, I have a diverse background in martial arts, and that's absolutely... essential. You know, I recommend that to many people, men, women, you know, children, seniors, because it completely centers your energy in the moment. It involves the spiritual aspect of one's being, the physical, the energetic, the conscious, the intellectual. One must be fully present, and one has to face that fighter, even if the weapons...
Immediate
situation. Yes, the fight-or-flight instinct kicks in, even if you're just sparring, even if, you know, the weapons are tipped or dulled or aluminum. It still triggers, you know, lifetimes or ancestral, you know, encoding in one's DNA that this is a life-threatening situation. And I've been a hair's breadth from death 3 times, and I've had some extremely traumatic situations happen to me over the course of my life that I've had to handle by myself, on my own. I've had a knife held to my throat. I've, you know, been in the arena of gunfire. I could go, that would take a whole other show, a show's time in and of itself. So life experience has been a really good teacher, where one finds what one is really made of, and harnessing one's courage and ability to be fully present, plug into the force. But besides that, maybe some more pleasant, comfortable, safe experience, are, you know, meditation, yoga, martial arts, living a balanced life, as you mm-hmm. were describing. You know, we again, that's a derivative of the 50s, is, you know, the Colonel Sanders modality of business. Do one thing and do it better than anybody else, you know, and that's it for the whole 60 years. And that paradigm, for the most part, doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And tragically, that is unfortunate, like Paul was describing. So, you know, I have had many clients and friends over the years, you know, that were high-ranking CEOs that in the downsizing process of corporations or banks or businesses or whatever, you know, they got ousted mm-hmm. and they got replaced by somebody half their age that, you know, the new, you know, conglomerate CEO can mold in according to their will. And, you know, they're in that position. What do I do now? But there's always, as long as you're still above ground, one can always reinvent themselves.
Yeah. No, I think it's very true. I think there's a lot to be said, and you said a lot of options there that really have, in my mind at least, a common denominator. And the common denominator is, you know, I go back to being reminded of that book called The Power of Now, you know, is the really being in the moment. And I know it sounds like a cliche.
No,
as often as people say, yeah. be in the moment. Right. But really, if you don't have the luxury... I hate to break it to you, mm-hmm. but you have the luxury of being afraid.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh,
no, seriously, you have the luxury of being afraid. If you were in a survival mode of being in the moment,
yes.
those factors wouldn't even...
You wouldn't think about it. Right.
I'm worried about making it across the street right now. That's right. where my focus is.
Yeah.
And I think that's where that illusion is perpetuated, okay? The immediacy of my reality of the sky is falling and the world is coming to an end and it's crumbling because I am not focused on the now.
And we have to remember.
I'm not in the moment.
And we've talked about it on the show just a little bit. You know, I adopted this girl from Mexico when she was 10. She was abused and beat up and all these things and horrible things happened to her. And we found her in foster care, my wife and I adopted her. And to this day, she has trouble thinking of tomorrow. She lives moment to moment. She's 25 now. And she doesn't worry ever about tomorrow because she spent her whole life trying to get through today.
Mm-hmm.
And so she never had the luxury of worrying about who do I want to be in life and what do I want to be. My father used to say that to me. My father grew up in the Great Depression and was terribly poor and didn't know if they're going to have a meal the next day and all that kind of stuff that happened in the 1930s and grew up in the ghetto and all the stuff. And he used to say to me, he'd get so exasperated, you know, when I get the typical in my teens, who do I want to be? Well, what am I going to be? I got to find myself. And he said, find yourself. Just go get a freaking job. What do you want to find yourself? Just get a job. Put one foot in front of the other and just move forward. Don't think about where it's going.
Be in the now.
Be in the now. And
that's your dad.
Yeah, it was my dad. So my dad and my daughter, from two different perspectives, in the middle of this baby boom where we had the luxury to sit and think about as teenagers. We didn't have to go out and get a job at 13 in a mine. Well, what are we going to be and who are we going to be? And then we got the chance to go to college and think about it. And then we had a chance to explore stuff. Because you did always sort of have your parents backing you up. Or you had your friends backing you. You had some group backing you up kind of thing. And you'd all figure it out. I think that's that loss. I never thought about it now. So I'm going to get choked up here. But that loss of backing you up. Like, for example, you talked about a near-death experiences. One of my dearest friends died, my childhood longest dear friend died a few months ago, same age, massive heart attack. And he'd had several heart attacks and lots of problems leading up to this. And it had almost died a couple years ago. And I said, why don't we ever talk about that? Why don't you talk about it to our we have a group of friends, we've all known each other. Why is this the forbidden topic here? I'd like to know. Did you see the light? What happened? And he was like, he couldn't talk about it. And my friends didn't want to hear about it. Mm. So here was this experience that we're all afraid of and we're all whistling in the dark saying, he went through it, you know, mm-hmm. what did you learn from it? He couldn't talk about it and we couldn't talk about it.
But you see, you, and I'm talking about you individually,
yeah.
have a hunger to know.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm the different one in the group. I'm the one that came here. You say I was paralyzed by fear.
You are and you're not.
I reimagined myself a couple of years ago and created this internet radio station.
So if you're,
I didn't give up and roll over when my job collapsed.
If your adopted daughter mm-hmm. is a living example of the, in front of you,
right.
of the being in the now,
right.
and how that sheds some of this other stuff that you really have
no
control
about
over.
Politics.
Right.
This other
okay. If you're... If your dad was here today mm-hmm. and dealing with what you're dealing with,
mm-hmm.
would he be as afraid as you are?
I
know it's an unfair question. I'm putting you in a situation.
I'd like to say no, because oddly enough, in his old age, he changed. And he became very fearful of everything, angry, not fearful, angry, angry of everything. My father used to rant and rave against Mexicans till the day he died. And I said, but your only granddaughter, your only grandchild is an adopted Mexican. Well, not her. I'm not talking about her, but those others. And he bought into this whole
Trump anger. Isn't it funny how we start echoing our parents?
Well, but the baby boomer is a curse. We've always, when I became a parent and I found myself saying, don't do that. I'm like, oh my God, I said sound I'd like never do that. I sound just like my mom.
Go ahead, Kenwell.
To the topic of fear and anger, they're absolutely
intertwined
and bedfellows. And, you know, of course, everybody has, you know, experiences of that and elements of that. I think that one of the fundamental tasks at hand is to not let that become
consuming,
you know, consuming and one's, you know, base off of which they interact with the world, you know, from on a daily basis and the way that, you know, their thought process goes.
Which could easily happen.
I mean,
you have to be consciously aware.
And a huge contributing factor, talking about the different generations, what you were just speaking of about the difference between Paul's father and Paul, is it's only been not the Industrial Revolution, but the technological revolution. There's something that happens to the human nervous system, the human brain, the human endocrine system, and the way that they all interact when it is removed from nature. Because it's only been since the technological revolution happened that these crutches, and while I love technology and it's a wonderful enhancement to my life, I thank God I grew up on a farm and every day, and my house has a big yard in it, and I know I can recognize it in myself that when starts up in me, I know, grab yourself by the shirt collar, Kenwa, and go for a run on the horse trail, get your hands in the dirt, reconnect
unplug.
To the earth, unplug, put the cell phone down, turn off the internet.
There's your best idea of the day. Because the only time I find a certain I'm not driven by my hand. I'm totally into technology. I'm a geek for technology. I created an internet radio station. I mean, the most technological thing you could do here. But if I do get out into nature, or if I do, this sounds silly, but gardening. It's the only thing with my hands that I actually like to do. I don't have the skills to be a carpenter, or I can't cook
and yet,
I'm frustrated by all those things.
And yet, you posted a picture of showing your grandson
building something,
building something,
which is rare. Wait, and did you see all the comments on my friends hooting and hollering saying, you building something? I can't imagine you building anything.
But
I said, shh, don't tell him. He doesn't know that I don't know how to do this.
I'm really not going to be fair to you right now.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm really not going to be fair to you because I just am mean that way, right?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of the general.
Let me tell you something.
Poster child.
Okay.
For the problem.
This is really manipulative, okay? You have a choice.
Yes.
For your grandson.
Mm.
To be afraid or to be hopeful.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll never show him fear.
No, that's not what I said. I didn't say what you show him.
Because they feel it anyway.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Kids will absorb that. So you have a choice. You have a choice to find your way to hopeful.
For his sake.
And positive outlook. Whatever little minutia of outlook that may be, whatever little pinhole of light that may
be.
Bastard,
you're going to make me hopeful for him here.
Right. I told you, I'm a manipulative SOB sometimes. No, seriously, because what I'm trying to tell you is, and again, I think what Kim was saying, is it is a personal choice. It is a choice. All this other noise, all this, you know, wheels of, you know, cacophony of noise that happens around us, it's all it is. It's noise. And there is, I don't necessarily think it's a, you know, orchestrated conspiracy that's gone over,
the cabal,
there's a certain amount of that, but I believe that any conspiracy that goes beyond two people basically has a potential of falling apart, right? But I think we are our worst enemies when we absorb that and we allow that to be the noise of our life. It could become the sort of the theme music for your day. Okay, but you have a choice. You can change the channel. You're in radio, change the channel.
I'm trying to unplug from all this stuff because I've been. So
I mean, do I need to put? News, yeah. Do we need to put sword in hand and teach you some techniques so that you could symbolically
You'd
when
love
you're
it. You'd love it.
Symbolically, you know, you can outplay these things in your, you know, when you feel find yourself in that position attacked by fear that you know what there are certain there's also certain support groups right that have certain symbolic actions that they do. You close your eyes for a minute. Mm-hmm. You visualize a certain safe location. You know, there are people that basically, you know, with the rubber band against your wrist. There's certain things that you do. That what does that do? It disrupts. It disrupts for a split second, and sometimes that is all that it takes. And if you
it
do that enough
cycle.
Time, it cuts the cycle.
I feel like we're all stuck suddenly in a world of dominatrix, and I want my safe word to just yell it and say stop already.
And the bottom line is, if we follow the path of fear, I'm a huge science fiction and Star Wars and Star Trek devotee. And what's C-3PO's big, you know, phrase throughout 4, 5, and 6 is, we're doomed. We're doomed.
Right.
And if we sign up for fear being our motivating catalyst, that is the guaranteed outcome, whether it was externally strategized or internally driven. It doesn't matter. You still arrive at the same outcome. And the only fix, the only satisfaction we get out of it is told you so, told you it was hopeless.
Yeah.
I get to feel right, even though I'm going down.
Right.
There's no glory in that.
There's no solution in the fear.
No cheese at the end of that tunnel.
There's no solution in the fear. So, okay, great. You're afraid. But at some point, you have to decide for yourself that's not sufficient. And I'm not saying deny the fact that there are variables out there that have a negative impact on your life.
There are fearful things out there.
But what do you...
Yeah.
What do you decide to do about that? And what do you decide to do about, you know, the old Serenity Prayer about, you know, God give me the wisdom to... what I can't, I
God give me the wisdom to...
To know the difference between the things that you can do something about and things you cannot. I'm butchering it here.
God will give me the wisdom to do the things I can do and...
Change the things I can do, accept the things I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes.
Right. That... And I'm sorry.
That was my mother's favorite prayer.
I am really sorry because what we're doing here is we're robbing you, okay? We're robbing you from this comfortable, well, it's not comfortable, but this selected false robe. Because I'll tell you what, there's an aspect to that fear that you take very personally.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I am challenged by. This is what I am facing. Guess what? If you have 200,000 people facing it, how is that an individual thing? But, oh, my God, that means you're not that special, are you?
Technology.
You're just one of many that are facing this reality. If you're one of many who are facing that reality, how can you be continuously entrenched in the fact that you're afraid? There's more. It's not individual anymore, right? It's not the only thing challenging you. There's 200,000 people that are dealing with the same thing.
That's true. And it is terrifying.
Sorry, you're not that special.
That's why we do to go to the internet and find communities of self-support where we were all angry.
But that's not happening. Well, what you're finding is communities of self
anger.
What's the word? Self.
People who feel angry like you.
No, when people basically get entrenched in wallow. You're finding communities of wallow. Mm-hmm. You're not finding communities of support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess that's what I was going towards. I think one of the features of getting older is that you lose a lot of the support that you have. Your family shrinks. Mm-hmm. Divorce happens. Children grow up and go away. Your friends die or move away. That connectedness that I felt with a community of people. We were all merry pranksters on the road riding the bus, right? To quote.
Yeah, but you are easy. You are easy rider on a motorcycle with maybe one other person. You weren't a crowd of people traveling through life. Right,
but we felt.
You had a saddlebag and you didn't know where the next meal was coming from.
We were, Superman. Nothing could touch us. We felt that we were impervious to all this stuff that we could, and maybe.
And you're telling me it's all because of age.
I think a lot of it's because of age.
And I'm telling you, it had something to do with the internal makeup. That you basically, that I.
Well, think I mean, I've stayed more positive than most of my friends. Yes, as much as I sound negative here. I have reinvented myself at old age. I'm always telling my friends, why don't you guys do the same thing? Why don't you do that to the whole Midwest? Reimagine yourselves. Reinvent yourselves. You know, one time Detroit was, as I pointed out in one of my posts, Detroit was the Silicon Valley of the 1920s. That's where Henry Ford created manufacturing. People were inventing things called cars. People flocked to go to Detroit because it was the most exciting place on the planet. If you wanted to know what was happening in this new industrial age, go to Detroit or Toledo or Pittsburgh or whatever. They were creating stuff. Somewhere along the way, they lost that energy and that belief that they could reimagine themselves.
But who said that that was a condition that was going to be you're somehow entitled to hold forever? Well, whether it be Detroit, whether it be
like
Silicon
being a
Valley,
team,
whether
you somehow think you're going to do it forever. You know, you when you got a winning hand, you think that's going to last forever here. You know,
well, and just going back to the whole fear factor, the one thing I would offer is that, as we know, as people age, as they accumulate more life experiences, and many of those references people do tend to remember the traumatic experiences more, and so it creates this reference, this internal library, that to become hopeful, I think some part of every living being craves, deeply longs for being hopeful, but it's the risk becomes so much greater because they have all these references of I hoped, I loved, I dreamed, I leapt, I followed my ambition, and I fell, and I was sabotaged, and I was divorced, and I was betrayed, and I was undermined, and I was abandoned. And the memory of that devastation, you know, is still in there.
It's overwhelming after a while. It's accumulated. The great Buddha said, do you remember one good thing or 10, or do you remember 10 good things or one bad thing?
But do we not also have the references in the data banks for when we did hope?
Absolutely.
She's just saying the bad ones outweigh the good ones.
I understand.
No,
they're stronger.
I'm just offering that as a compassionate understanding for why people tend to default to, I want to, but I'm too tired. I don't have the energy. The risk is too great. But this is where we must pull back the curtain within ourselves and say, am I just going to go on cruise control to the grave from here on out?
It's pretty much what you're doing if all you're motivated by is the overwhelmingness of fear.
Or am I going to take the risk to do the work, to do the internal work?
Sure.
In whatever way I can, and pray on it, and in prayer and meditation every day, to just, you know, show me the next page.
Show me the way. But a lot of us, I wouldn't say maybe everybody, but I'd say a lot of us in some form or the other do have also those in the databanks, just being very kind of like data-driven. In the databanks, those references that for us had meaning in when we reached, whether small or large way, and succeeded, where we reached and had a positive outcome, where we had that moment of connection with somebody that was really put us in that warm spot for whatever short period of time or long period of time it was. We have that. So, like anything that you do when you go on Google and do a search, we are, at some point or the other, going to have to come to the reality that we are personally responsible to what it is that we choose to retrieve from our databanks. But is it the examples of when we failed when we tried, or is it the examples of when we succeeded when we tried?
But I think you're denying human nature.
Or is it both in a balanced way that's based on reality?
I get it, but
well,
I think you're
denying. What is the intention? We can look at, I strived and I failed.
Absolutely
here.
Correct.
Now, can I disseminate that and learn? Oh, okay, I'm starting to see a pattern. This didn't work because I have a tendency to self-sabotage, shortchange myself, encounter people that are reincarnations of my abusive mother. So is my intention to just go, yeah, man, I always do this, why try again? Or now I see, ding, okay, now that I understand the pattern, what can I do to adjust it?
Well, that's the hope of enlightenment. But you're denying what I think she was hinting at, what I certainly believe, is that the power of a bad experience for most people, for many of us, out just in human nature, is more powerful and more limiting than the power of a good thing. You're saying, remember the time when it worked, and that should motivate you. But more people are going to remember the time it didn't work, and that's going to frighten you.
But that's more powerful. That's not absolute human nature.
Exactly.
That is a conditioned response.
Well, the great Buddha once said,
What's more powerful? What do you remember more? One good 10 good experiences or one bad experience?
Yeah, but I'll challenge that. Okay, I'll challenge that. I'm not challenging the Buddha. I'm challenging you. Okay, I'm
challenging you.
This way. Okay, hold on a second. And we've talked about this before.
Right.
Okay, that people invest in experiences.
Right.
Like there's been a growth in consciousness that's reflected even into tourism industry.
Oh, we're right. Starved for experiences.
Where people are basically tapping into spending money on experiences. Mm-hmm. Driven tourism mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. purchases,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because you buy that car, you drive it out of the lot, and it's not only the physical depreciation that happens.
The thrill's
gone. There's been a study that has shown that you have a diminishing rate of return on the sense of experience and fulfillment that comes from that physical purchase.
And okay? You've talked about it with that other guy that was on here.
And isn't that hopeful?
Yes.
Doesn't that speak
exactly,
to the beauty of
exactly.
human nature that they are craving? Connection that they
right.
are craving genuine organic experiences.
People are looking for charity work. Like I want to go spend my 2 weeks vacation
yeah.
working
yeah.
on building a couple of houses in Mexico.
Yeah.
Right? Yes, I want my spa treatment at the beach as well. But I
right.
also want to feel
right.
like that because it fills a part of my soul that is
spas designed
not
by Rod Gant,
not,
re- right.
not,
right.
not really, right. not really, fu- not really, fu- not really fulfilled. Right?
I'll acknowledge this.
Hold on a second, Paul. But the study on the, because we're talking about, you know, the only reference that we have, or one of the big overwhelming references that we have, is that when, you know, the fear of what we've tried, and we remember things more so when they're negative.
Right.
And I'm challenging that in this way. Okay. Part of that study showed another very interesting factor. And and the example it used to prove the point was fascinating, because I don't think anybody would argue with it.
Okay.
Right? Is that relationships, like when you go out and you spend money on something that is relationship focused, mm-hmm. okay, you come back from that experience, okay, you may have had a bad massage, for example, or some kid basically
a
hit your
trip.
Hand on the hammer while you were trying to basically be of service to this small village or something, right?
Right.
But what happens over time when it comes to experiences is that we shed the negative. And we remember the positive.
Mm-hmm.
And the example that was used to prove that theory was about personal relationships. Where you go with a personal relationship, it could have been a shit relationship by the time it was over. And 10-20 years later, you have fond memories of certain things that happened in that relationship. So for you, for us to say that human nature deviates and is drawn into the dark side of negativity. Okay.
That it outweighs.
It doesn't necessarily do that. You have a choice when you remember that bad relationship years later in remembering the good or only the bad, and yet human nature in that case remembers the positive.
So maybe it's more
because you crave the warm and fuzzy feeling.
Maybe it's more with relationships then. So you don't have a relationship as much with maybe I'm getting too far out there, your job or a company. So that's sort of abstract. Somebody fires you.
You mean you're disconnected.
Well, but you've talked about in the show, and you brought in people who said there is a substrain of people in aging baby boomers, particularly if they have the financial means to do so, don't want to just go and travel the world, don't want to just play golf like my dad did endlessly till he died. They want to do something. They want an experience, right? They don't want to just go visit the Eiffel Tower. They want to build the Eiffel Tower. They don't want to just go watch something. They want to do something.
I agree
and
with
I,
you with one
caveat.
I agree with you with one caveat.
Yeah.
It's not because they can afford to do that. I think it's because there's a part of the human psyche
that wants to do that.
That needs to have that part of their soul fed. And
yes.
It doesn't have to do with the economic status of that person. It doesn't have to do that. There are people that will go basically and work with the homeless even though they themselves are one paycheck away from being homeless themselves.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So
yes.
If you could get more people to do that, I'll buy into that because that's positive experiences. That's one of the things that's disconnected. I think people back in the Midwest, they don't know any of these others that they're afraid of. The Chinese, the Muslims, the African Americans, the Mexicans, all this group that they're railing against, all these others that have ruined their lives here, and the list keeps growing daily here. They don't have much direct. For example, with all my friends,
by the way,
rant and rave about Mexicans, and I say one of them said once, "Well, if you feel so great about it, why don't you take one of them?" I said, "I did."
Yes, you see, but
I did, and that changed my whole view.
I don't think the reeling against people that you know it's becoming almost again to me a cliche. Oh, but you know, you're afraid of what you don't know. No, I think you've decided to be afraid, and you're just finding a scapegoat for your fear, rather than actually addressing your fear.
Yeah.
And
is that your fear isn't based on that person you don't know. Your fear is based on fear of the future, right?
Right.
And you're making that person the reason, because you, rather than looking again internally to what's driving and determining you to go down the path of fear, you're basically trying to project it out on some other entity, some other minority, that this is
their
the reason
fault.
Why I should
my
be afraid.
Fault. It's their fault.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting that throughout the course of, you know, film, like you were quoting Dune, fear is the mind killer.
Yeah, fear is the mind killer.
And that's when, you know, when I'm afraid, whenever I feel afraid, you know, when I can remember... I'll hear those key phrases throughout so many films of Dune, The Matrix, the remake of Jungle Book in 94. You know, Mowgli was told by, I don't remember who, but was told by an authority figure that when he was half a tiger, mm-hmm. and when he faced Shere Khan and showed no fear, then he would be a whole tiger. And it's such a powerful scene when that actually happens.
The Lion King or any of these, yeah,
right,
overcoming
right.
fear.
And they're all the path of the initiate. They're all the path of the one. They're all the path of self-mastery. Luke Skywalker becoming full Jedi. Mm-hmm. He has to face, he has to go through mm-hmm. that his father is basically, you know, the root of all evil
right.
in the 3D world. He can't sugarcoat that. He can't put it on the back
burner. Your father is the root of all evil, all this evil that you've been fighting against.
He has to go through the dark night of the soul and, God bless, lose his arm and face that. But through the process of him being willing to do all that, and connecting with the force, the source, the divine, the all that is, he's able to not only master himself, which is what all the great spiritual paths and all the Buddha and Christ and Lao Tzu and Muhammad are all here to offer us a guideline, you know, a pathway to, but he's able to facilitate his father.
And at the end of the day,
right,
you are still personally accountable.
You're big on that one. Yeah.
Personally accountable to pick the path and to do the work.
Yes.
This isn't going to come in a nice little box with a Starbucks logo on the side of it that says, you know, seasonal, you know, offering. This is a lifetime commitment.
It comes in a lunchbox.
Yeah, that I can't open. Actually, you know what? It's a very good metaphor. It's a very good metaphor.
That you can't open.
You gave me a friggin' lunchbox.
That's sealed.
That is a promise of better years, past better years, retro radio, right?
Right.
That neither has a speaker on it, neither has, you know, there's no authenticity to the fact that this is actually a radio, right?
And it's sealed
and it's
with plastic.
And it has the promise of
cookies
of fudge mint cookies inside it.
Very good.
But I can't open it
easily
without taking a friggin' knife and cutting through the BS
right.
to get to
oh,
the stuff that's inside.
Wow, you
bravo.
Really did there.
Okay.
Bring it all together.
So in our last couple of minutes, I'll point out one other insight that came to me as she's talking here, the power of storytelling. That's what I've been a big believer in, this medium. Getting people, and I know you are too, since you started this show, the power of telling stories again. We don't talk to each other. We don't tell stories. Movies tell us stories. That's a powerful thing. But we don't have shared narratives anymore. We don't even have a shared narrative in this country. There are those facts, and there are my facts. There are your facts, and there are my facts. There's your story and my story. When I listen to my friends back in the Midwest rant about Obama, and they say, worst president ever. And I say, why? And they go, well, it's obvious. Worst president ever. And I go, well, he may not have been the best president ever, but I don't know, the worst president? What do you? And one of them said to me the other day.
Yeah, but nobody likes shades, okay?
No.
It's ultimate extremes and absolutes.
One of them said to me, are you happy? Are we better off than we were? I said, yeah, no war, and we recovered from the worst economic thing since the Great Depression. I'll give them some
for the longest consistent growth.
Looks kind of okay to me. I look around, I feel good. But I'm not sitting in a town where all the factories closed and the world changed, you know. And I'm
because that happened between the 28th and the 29th
yeah,
of December.
Yeah, right.
Just like that, it went from rosy prospects for the future to no jobs at all.
No,
I sound like something out of West Side Story.
Yeah, right. You do. See, we're going back to another movie there. So I just think that the power of narratives, the power of storytelling is a lost art that it's another thing we seek as human beings. Tell me your story. Tell me a story, mommy and daddy.
Yes.
Make it all okay. And we don't have anybody spinning positive stories.
Again, why do you want to hear that story? If you want to hear that story because you want to escape in it, it's one thing. And I think we all want to escape in it to a certain degree. But if you want to hear that story, because it's the same as reading, for example, biographies or watching documentaries, you are looking for threads of truth that you can basically bring in and weave into your life.
Yes, yes. It's because we need to be reminded, because we are so perpetually bombarded by information, by false information that says you are trapped in this box.
Right.
Storytelling reminds us that it is possible to access another
but
world.
But only if you personally decide and choose to take that lesson of that story and take
and
nuggets out of it and integrate it. Yeah. Otherwise, all that you're doing is doing
escapism.
Exactly what they did in the Depression,
right.
Which is go to movie theaters
escapism.
To escapism.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with escapism, but it's like friggin' like meditation.
It can be a drug.
It's like meditation. It's where you step off the wheel, the mouse wheel, and you say, I'm going to just get quiet. Okay, I mean, I love always referring back to that song by the Eagles. Okay, don't let your own wheels drive you crazy. It doesn't say don't let life's challenges drive you crazy. It doesn't say the outside circumstances that are causing, you know, impacting your life like a meteor shower. It says don't let your own wheels drive you crazy. Okay,
right.
There's a personal accountability factor.
Right.
So as we end this show, I want to take a moment because it is, like I said, it's the first show of the year. We want to basically leave it. I mean, we've probably changed a lot of people's comfort levels today.
Wow.
Okay. But I want to just say this, okay? We're looking at the year ahead. What is something you would share with people that are listening as far as...
Get drunk and escape.
The closest... Well, you know what, Paul? That's yours because I was going to ask you.
Get drunk and escape.
So Paul says get drunk and escape, right? I don't know where you're escaping to because we've said on this show, no, but none of us are getting out alive here, right?
That's right.
Kenwell, what would you say? What would you say is your mantra, at least now,
path to empowerment
as we go into another year? I don't think it would be something that's probably unique to this year, but what would you share with people as being sort of your guiding mantra?
Do not get drunk and escape. reclaim your individuated power and governorship and authority. Take the risk to delve within oneself to discover where those old wounds, where those old booby traps, where those saboteurs are hidden, and find your own eclectic way to heal them through whatever resonates with you, whether it's something very peaceful, such as meditation and yoga, whether it's something that's more externally confrontational, like martial arts, support groups, meetup groups, being out in nature, taking a class online or at a university, but take the risk. I noticed something incredible. Right after the election, there was a week of trauma shock where everyone was sort of just...
Disbelief.
Yeah, gobsmacked. Whether they were happy about it or not.
Yeah, there was still disbelief.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. But then, after that sort of slowly started to dissipate and wear off, I saw the media, again, perpetually trying to convince us, be afraid, all these terrible things are happening globally, locally, nationally, huddle down, bunker up. I saw so many individuals take the risk that even if it was uncomfortable for them, they would look someone in the eye that they maybe traditionally wouldn't and say, hi, how you doing? Let me help you. I'll get the door for you. And you could feel it. It was tangible. It was tactile in the air.
Even though it may have been uncomfortable.
Even though it was uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, for me, the moment that happened.
Encouraging and inspiring that was to witness and to be a part of and to know that that is in the groundswell and that that is absolute and that no amount of contrivancy or attempt to externally control or contradict that, that's the reality of its existence, could quell it, could snuff it out. And we are in the continuance of that wave. So keep going with that.
Got to cut you off because we got a 2 o'clock show.
Hold on a second. Let me have one of those cutlasses for a second.
I got. Well, I got to run the show too.
I know. I just want to say this. Okay. I've said this before. It's very short. Okay.
30 seconds.
I'm going to say this. Okay.
I got another show.
My mantra is I've got this thing here, so you're not turning anything off. Okay. But my mantra is this. Okay. And it's not really a mantra. Be careful not to rob yourself of the uniqueness of your own story.
Be conscious, because
be conscious of the fact, because it's very easy to do. We embracing the common dialogue that's happening around, becoming part of the language or everything. But at the end of the day, be conscious not to rob yourself of the uniqueness of your own story. And the one thing you start out by doing is cut through your own bullshit. Not other people's. Look internally. Have the moral fortitude to actually do a brutal moral inventory and cut through your own bullshit, okay? And don't rob yourself of the uniqueness of your own story.
I'm going to have to cut you off right there.
Because that's where the cheese is.
Because that's where the cheese is.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.